The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 17th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin on a gorgeous Monday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area, and tons to get to on today's show. We've got basketball, we've got football, we've got news, we've got updates, we've got drama. We got a little bit of everything here on the show this afternoon. Since Auburn football didn't play this weekend, Christian, I'm allowed to say happy Monday to you. Maybe not because of basketball.
I was going to say, are you allowed to say happy Monday?
Yeah, I think it's a happy Monday. Well, you may not as much as me, but happy Monday to me. How do you feel on this Monday?
Weirdly enough, although Auburn football didn't play, I'm a little upset today. Yeah. And not because of Auburn basketball, but because of Auburn football. I'm a little bit upset today.
Wow.
And it's not
I
even...
I figured it would be because of your Lee Scott Warriors.
That hurts as well. But
man, we've already moved on from that. Wow,
crossover season, man. Basketball stuff today,
brother.
Didn't allow me to even cope with anything.
That's good though. If that's how you would want it to happen, I think.
Oh, yeah. And shout out to Trey, the graphics guy at Lee Scott Academy, posted the graphic really late, and then the very next morning, basketball season, and so it just kind of.
Just roll right
the,
into it.
Shove the final score off.
Yeah, just roll right into it.
No, made it. It made the pain a little bit less intense. But congrats to you, sir.
Yes.
What will be probably the biggest game at Duck Sanford Stadium ever.
It's up there. Yeah. I'm gonna talk with some folks and get some confirmation. Right now, arguably is the word I'm putting in there. Arguably the biggest game in Duck Sanford history. Definitely one of the biggest for sure. One of the biggest in the rivalry's history of now Auburn and Opelika in the state semifinals this Friday. It's incredible, man. It's unbelievable. We saw it on the bracket, right, when it came out and everything was finalized. And sure, we talked about the possibility, the idea, right? But it was going to take two victories by each team in some difficult situations to make it happen, and it did. Auburn went down and just put it on Daphne Friday night thanks to sophomore quarterback J.D. Pate. Went out and balled out Friday night. And then Opelika was able to host Baker and pulled away in the second half and kind of took control of that game. So, Auburn Opelika state semifinals in 7A at Duck Sanford Stadium Friday night. It does not get any bigger than
that. And how else would you want it for 7A? Auburn Opelika, Central Thompson.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the four perennial teams in 7A. And of course, all three of those coming from one region,
the same region is pretty remarkable.
It does,
yeah.
But it goes to show you.
Yeah,
but it goes to show you that it's the toughest region in 7A. And when you go and you go on the road to other teams and you do what you did to Daphne and other teams, goes to show. Just respectfully in 7A, which is so weird because 5A, 6A, North and South is the place to be,
especially
for high school football.
Yeah, Mobile is ridiculous in 5 and 6A.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know where the separation or why the separation is what it is between 6 and 7A down in Mobile, because you think about Saraland and teams like Theodore down there.
Yeah.
I think they're 5A. Like those teams are nasty, dude. But, yeah, regardless, Auburn High moved on, and they'll host Opelika at Duck-Sanford Stadium this Friday night. And fun fact, tickets went on sale this weekend. The official word that I got this morning
you couldn't even watch the movie.
They sold out in an hour and 15 minutes,
yeah,
which is a state record. It's a record in the state of Alabama. So
to the point of where you didn't even know tickets were being sold.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy. So, yes, congratulations and shout-out to Auburn High School football. I know Lee Scott, tough game on the road Friday night against Montgomery Academy. You knew what you were walking into.
We did.
But it still hurts. I've been there, done that. I mean, it's not fun.
No, it was one of those games where you feared that whatever happened could happen, but you didn't think that every single one of your fears would come true.
Sure.
And the best way that I described that on the Lee Scott Sports Network was the boxing events or the MMA events that you see with the young, inexperienced boxer who has all of the energy, is bouncing around the ring while the veteran guy just kind of sits there. Lets him kind of exalt all of his energy, just kind of sit there and, all right, feel him out, feel him out. I mean, how many times do you see that round one and two, you feel like nothing happens because each guy is just trying to feel each other out, almost like football with the first couple of drives. Very, very simple, but Lee Scott played the opposite way and had all of the aggression, all of the energy, and MMA kind of punched him in the nose and didn't really feel like there was the ability to respond after that. Again, just that young, inexperienced boxer. But no, after saying all of that, it's not even the reason that we're upset today or that I'm a little bit upset today.
Okay.
And
all right.
Not even necessarily on the rundown, but I'm going to bring it up and mention it. It's the fact that, yet again, Auburn gets another night game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. And you talk about the talent, you talk about the schedule, and you talk about the timings of the games, of how everything could have been this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this season could have been magical for Auburn.
You get your first two games in SEC play on the road. You come back home. You get a night game for Georgia. Cool. You get a night game for Missouri. Cool. You get a night game for Kentucky. And now you have a night game for the Iron Bowl.
This may be the most night games in one season I've ever seen at Auburn.
Ever. And that's all that you ask for as a college football fan base, is to have one. Or to have two night games. For Auburn to have four?
Yeah, think about Georgia fans, man. They've complained for a decade that they don't get night games because they don't.
They got two of them this year and
BTA
to Texas.
Yeah, you see why. I mean, I'm with you.
But
yeah,
the fact that you just see that, and I was sitting there talking with a couple of my buddies that watch football but don't know football like that. And one of the guys we watched the Arkansas game with.
Yeah,
And basically said, like, the defense is really good. And then he watched the Vanderbilt game and said, the offense is really good. The defense, what happened? And it told him everything. And he was like, oh, so what you're saying is this should have happened, but it didn't. Correct.
Yeah,
everything was right there. But 8 minutes in, we have a fantastic show for you here set up today.
Yeah.
We get to open up the show today talking about Auburn and Houston in Birmingham, our thoughts, our feelings. Players that surprised us on the floor for Auburn, maybe in a good way, maybe in a negative way. Give shout-outs to the two freshmen for Houston as well that did a majority of the scoring for the Cougars. We'll spend a little time looking about Auburn's upcoming schedule. Again, Jackson State here coming up on Wednesday, back inside Neville Arena, and then maybe a little bit of a players' era preview, because that tournament is going to be absolutely incredible. And yes, that starts next Monday, Tuesday, and into Wednesday. So if you wanted to stress this weekend, don't worry, you can stress right after that as well, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the hardwood. We're also going to get into Coach DJ Durkin's press conference, or the interviews that he had today. And how you feel like everything that he continues to say wins people over slower and slower, but you feel like that silent, crowd is beginning to grow just a little bit. And so we'll have some of the quotes that he said on that, some of the updates on injuries, on Ashton Daniels, on the, just the quarterback situation as a whole. He put that to rest, made a joke, and said, man, I want to bet today because I figured that would be the very first question asked. Yeah. So he pumped his fist and said, thank you for asking that. But did give a nice little answer to that in there as well. We'll flip back to college basketball for just a little bit, talk about some scores from last week and how there's a bunch of intriguing games coming up this week and weekend as well. And then hour number two is all things college football. We get to talk about college football again, just the weekend last week delivering once again. We get to recap games around the SEC, the top 25. We'll talk about how this weekend is usually one of those weekends where it's just cupcakes all the way around, and a bunch of teams are just kind of getting their final tune-ups, making sure that teams stay healthy, but it's actually quite the opposite because there's some really big games in college football this weekend, and a lot of them with teams that have college football playoff aspirations, and how the 12-team formats, as we saw what could happen this past weekend, you could see a lot more of that this weekend. All of that before Jacob Hillman joins us of the Auburn Sports Network at 3:30. And so once again, a fantastic show that we have set up for you, and the phone lines are open if you would be, if you would like to be a part of the show for the first 90 minutes or so. That number is 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn in Birmingham, what you liked, what you didn't like. The text box is always open at 334-784-1067.
Yep, so a lot to get to. We do that now as Auburn basketball was in action yesterday afternoon up in Birmingham, where they took on the number one team in the country, the Houston Cougars.
Which I think needs to continuously be stated.
Correct.
This is the team that Lenardi has being the number one top overall seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for good reason, right? Because of the guys they brought back, plus the freshmen that they have on that team that Auburn clearly saw yesterday, and because of Kelvin Sampson, who is a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, he's one of the best to ever do it, and they were talking yesterday on the broadcast. It's like, man, you have Houston basketball being dominant.
Yeah.
And for people that have grown up watching college basketball for 40, 50 years, Houston has not always been this giant, but they are now. And I think they also showed a stat to where this was one of, if not the biggest gap in total wins.
Yeah, 802.
For head coaches going against each other in a college basketball game. 802-3.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was 805-3. So 802.
Oh, that was the difference.
I believe that was the overall official
Something
number.
Like that. To where you've got a guy who's coached for decades and Stephen Pearl, who's in his fourth ever game as the head coach of Auburn men's basketball. Right? And so at the forefront, okay, at the forefront of this, yes, it is frustrating and upsetting and disheartening that Auburn lost this basketball game 73-72. But you start to dig into this a little bit, and man, this was a hell of a performance. I mean, this was a really good basketball game for 40 minutes.
If you did not look at the final score, would you not have watched this game and have built 100% more confidence in Stephen Pearl, this coaching staff, and the players' ability to respond?
I would. I think if I watched it without knowing the score, I would have told you Houston won by 8 to 10, probably, just based off of how it looked and felt for most of the game.
Which adds to the point even more.
Correct.
About the ability to respond and how Houston had an 8-point lead three times, and every single time it was cut to 8, or it was swelled to 8, it was cut down to 2.
Mm-hmm.
But you felt like those were the only true times that Auburn could get consecutive stops and consecutive scores, especially in the second half. Otherwise, it just felt like when you got a stop, they got a stop. When they got a bucket, you got a bucket. And you kind of felt like that was the story, especially in that second half.
And, you know, people were talking about, oh, Houston didn't play a good game, and Auburn, you know, Auburn got lucky and got close or whatever. It's like, no, Auburn forced them to not play a good game. They forced some of the veterans on that team have good performances.
I hate the way that that's the way that it gets phrased, is, well, Houston didn't play great. And it's like, well.
And they didn't. But again, Auburn deserves a lot of credit.
It's because
for that.
Of the other team on the floor.
Correct. Who I think responded defensively the way that Stephen Pearl has wanted them to respond. You hold that team to 73 points, man, you're doing something right. And you really only got beat by two guys. Two of them. You let two guys, including a freshman, beat you, which.
Both freshmen.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget the CNAC's a dude. He's a freshman. I forget that. You let both freshmen beat you, which I'm not saying that in a demoralizing, demeaning way. It's just it's the truth. Auburn beat Houston with a freshman last year, right? So you look at it that way, and at the end of the day, does this Auburn basketball team have issues? Yeah, they do, and they have some things to figure out and work out, I think especially on the offensive end of the floor, but the fact that you continued to fight and you battled back and you kept this thing within a couple of possessions and you had several chances to win it at the end in the fourth game of the year, that's fine. It's fine, okay? The way we described it a year ago is now applying this year. Remember, we described it last year to start the season with the tough non-conference slate that this Auburn team had last year. Same thing they do this year. But our wording was, you're going to lose some games, and that's okay. It's not the end of the world. Turns out, that Auburn basketball team was Final Four good. They were national title good. They just fell short, and they won almost all of those non-conference games last year. But that ideology truly applies to this year's team.
Sure.
Where losing this game yesterday, 73-72, to the number one team in the country, it's okay. Don't lose your minds. Don't give up on Stephen Pearl, and I don't think people are. I'm just vocalizing it.
Yeah.
You played a tough team. You played a tough game. And if you want to go with the argument that Houston didn't play their best basketball, fine. But Auburn didn't either. And I think this team proved that they've got some dudes, and they're going to be a problem in the SEC this year.
The thing that I am the most impressed with for this Auburn team, and again, we're allowed to have this mindset and talk about this and how everything is going to be okay. I obviously don't think that if Stephen Pearl was in here right now, that would be the question in the way that we were going about it, because, again, I love it from a head coach right after the game, basically in the press conference, saying that we didn't come here to participate.
Moral
victories are for losers.
I love it. I love that.
Why would you not want to hear that from a coach, again, who is playing or coaching in his fourth ever game as a head coach and took arguably the title favorite down to where they had to get three stops in 25 seconds, which they were able to do, which goes to show you Houston's defense, and we'll talk about the final play call here on the other side of the break and how my feelings have changed a little bit with the play call after seeing it two or three times. But what was the biggest fear for this basketball team going into the season?
Rebounding.
They only got out-rebounded by three.
Yeah.
If you would have told me that would have been the case, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have told you because, again, everybody had the fear because Auburn didn't have their one guy. And even Keyshawn Murphy, who is supposed to be or who is going to be the guy before Keyshawn Hall ultimately ended up being the leading rebounder and arguably will be all season long, they didn't have that one guy. They didn't have the Jani Broome, Dylan Cardwell to where the guards can go start escaping and get out to the three-point line. You have the outlet pass and you can get out and go. We talked about how this team is going to have to be a team where there's four, if not five, guys on the defensive glass that go every single time. And you look at what Auburn did rebounding-wise. Keyshawn Hall, double-double Keyshawn Hall. You feel like that's going to be the story. A lot of those, he had four offensive rebounds because of him getting hacked in the lane, but coming away with offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
Keyshawn Murphy had five. Freeman had three. Overton had five. Sebastian Williams-Adams had four. And a couple other guys had one in there as well. You had multiple guys get multiple rebounds, which you feel like is a confidence builder moving forward because you don't rely on one guy to be the only one to go and get defensive or offensive rebounds, which Auburn got 14 of those as well. You're seeing what Stephen Pearl talked about in his opening press conference as head coach, which we were able to attend here a couple of months ago, And then you're seeing it work its way into fruition in practice and on the floor. He talked about how he wanted to get back to dominating offensive rebounds. You didn't dominate, but you had 14 of them. And that's going to continue to lead to more and more points later on in the season when you had... Oh, gosh, do we have... Oh, I guess we don't have it on here. I'll have to go to stat broadcast. But second chance points. I'd be willing to bet that Auburn had, again, a big handful of those. You had 30 points in the paint. You're seeing it come to fruition, and obviously not a conversation we would have with the head coach here about how everything is going to be just fine. But in the grand scheme of things, you had three chances to beat the number one team in the country in your fourth game.
Yeah.
You feel like everything
you're
is going
gonna to be all right. Now, it's not perfect, and we'll talk about that when we come back as Auburn falls to Houston, 73-72. Talking some more basketball after this, then we'll get into football, what DJ Durkin had to say, and who could play quarterback this weekend for the Auburn Tigers. That's all coming up here as we're just underway on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break where we will flip gears over to football as DJ Durkin, interim head coach for Auburn, spoke to the media today and gave a crucial update on the quarterback situation. So we'll talk about that coming up at 2:30. But phone lines are open for a while if you want to be a part of the show on this Monday afternoon. 334-321-1390. If you are going to call about football, I ask that you wait another 5 or 6 minutes. We'll get you in at that point, but we're talking basketball here for the next couple of minutes, kind of wrapping up the conversation on Auburn and Houston. And you said you've changed your tune, Christian, on what happened at the end of the game yesterday as Auburn falls to Houston 73-72, had several chances to beat them, right? And what's unfortunate is you didn't get off a shot. You didn't get off a shot. Tahad had it knocked away, goes out of bounds twice, goes out of bounds. You get stuck at the end of your own bench, basically inbounding in the deep corner, and Auburn draws up the play to throw it up to Keyshawn Murphy, hoping he either A, can catch it and put it in, B, he can catch it and get fouled, or C, he could tip it in or do whatever, right? You were hoping for something along those lines. We watched it, you called it, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
But you've changed your tune a little bit.
A little bit. And, yeah, we were both rather frustrated because we were sitting on the couch, and it was quite literally, all right, based off of Keyshawn Murphy standing at the top of the key, and you had Tahad Pettiford standing at the free throw line. Okay, here comes an up screen. They're going to switch everything and try and get the smaller guard on Keyshawn Murphy, and they're going to throw it up. And quite literally exactly what happened. But instead, Houston, as good defenses do, they switched everything. And they put big guard on big guard to where there wasn't a big size differential in the lob to Keyshawn Murphy. But going back and watching this play a couple of times, I don't think that was the main play. I think that it immediately got blown up as soon as they saw Houston walk onto the floor and kind of set up their defense. And you're going back and you're watching it, and they had their big where was he? I believe it was Mercy Miller who came in, or was it Sacco, who just played, wasn't a big factor offensively, but their biggest defender. And rather than just face guarding the ball in that deep corner, he was standing almost at the three-point line, not allowing anything to come back. So it had to go basically straight with the inbounds. And although you would have loved to get some sort of bounce pass to a guard in a final shot, the way the ball was just positioned, you would have given anything for that other defender to have stepped out of bounds with 3 seconds, and you could have had a normal baseline out-of-bounds play. Going back and watching it, I don't think there was too much else that could have been done.
You had time for a catch and shoot. It had to be quick, right? And somebody just texted us in our text box, 334-784-1067. Seems that Auburn seemed to be too intent on having to hide, take the final shot in the final 20 seconds. I think we have other options. Hopefully, Auburn learned. And clearly, down the stretch, yes. Like, you, especially since you feel like Tahad broke out of his shooting slump. His three-point percentage was fine. His, for the game, field goal percentage was still not great. 5 of 14 from the floor, but 3 of 8 from deep, right? You felt like Tahad turned it on. It was playing good basketball.
And was 5 of 12 before that final stretch.
Yeah, exactly. So you wanted the ball in his hands, but Houston clearly was saying, no, we're going to deny him and force you to throw it to somebody else. I think if Keyshawn Hall is on the floor and not injured on the bench, you have him as an option. You just felt kind of stuck in that scenario. I wouldn't have hated a Kevin Overton play, maybe an Elijah Freeman play, who I think deserved a shot because of the defensive effort that he showed late in the game to give you an opportunity to win that game.
And just because of the length, the arm, the wingspan that he's able to provide.
I hate that play. I hate the play that it was. And Auburn's not the only one. Teams run it all the time, and I hate it. It's a hope play in hopes that you get called for a foul. But my problem is, if he does get fouled, you're putting a career 63% free throw shooter at the line to make two and win the ball game. I don't love that. But it is what it is. And at the end of the day, you lose by one to the number one team in the country. Auburn has more opportunities, including Jackson State this week and a trip to Las Vegas. We'll talk more basketball as the week goes on, but we take phone calls and flip to football right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. You, Christian Griffin, across from me here on ESPN. And we're about to get to the phone lines. And we were talking Auburn basketball falling short against Houston. And we were discussing the final play call that Auburn drew up or bailed out to, tossing it up to Keyshawn Murphy, hoping to get fouled or hoping he catches in and makes a play or whatever the case may be. And I said that I didn't like it because it's a hope play. And you said that you were kind of given a little bit of leniency, Christian, because of what Houston did defensively. Someone texted in our text box. Again, it's open all the time. 334-784-1067. That's the On the Line specific text box. And says, if people don't understand what a hope play is, it's throwing a fade on fourth and inches against Penn State, hoping you get a pass interference call when you have an NFL running back. That's a flash from the past right there, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Yep.
Shout out Tank Bigsby. Had 4 carries for like 36 yards last night for the Eagles.
Yeah. I mean, I was there, and I watched that play happen live, and it was unfortunate. So, there you go.
Thankfully,
Auburn got revenge, right?
Thankfully, Auburn got revenge, and thankfully they came out of the halftime break and decided to do something with it, too.
True. In case you didn't know, go back and watch the highlights. They're on YouTube somewhere. Okay, let's get to the phone lines for the first time today. They're open until 3:30, so we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And we get to the phone lines with Lonnie down in Lochipoca. What's going on, man? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, guys. War Eagle, how are y'all doing?
Doing all right, my man. What's on your mind?
Well, I was very, very pleased, proud of the way the basketball team played yesterday. I actually did not think that we would keep it that close. I mean, I thought that we would probably lose that game somewhere between 5 and 10 points, kind of close to what the line was. We've got some talent on that team.
Yeah.
One thing, though, you guys were mentioning about the very last play, I had a problem with the play before that they drew up. And I know they were trying to get the ball in Pettiford's hands, but in my opinion there, you probably are better off using him as a decoy, especially against Kelvin Simpson, because he knows where you're going, mm-hmm. Or Kelvin Sampson, sorry. He knows where you're going with that ball. So I think that play, the last play of the game, I didn't really like all that much either, but the one before that wasn't great in my opinion, but
where Tahad gets basically stuck on the right side of the floor, and
then he has to throw up a a weird
jump stop floater.
Yeah, you could have set some screen somewhere and used him as a decoy or whatever. I'm not a basketball coach.
If Keyshawn Hall was not injured and was on the floor, I think you would feel confident enough, Lonnie, to have done that. But with your best, arguably your best scorer sitting on the bench injured, I think you just felt like you were limited in options.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that hurt big time, him being off the floor. Is he 100% or going to be 100%? Have you guys heard on his injury?
I haven't heard anything since post-game yesterday, so we are waiting to see. I need to see when Stephen Pearl's next media availability is. Believe that'll be tomorrow, and I assume that's when we'll get the latest update on Keyshawn Hall.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, again, not to be negative about it, because I'm very proud of the way the guys play, but unless something changes, the Serbian kid, Jovic's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have it. He just does not. And I know he's a freshman and he's young and all that, but he got obliterated in that game yesterday. I mean, he just got absolutely abused every time he was on the floor. So I don't know what needs to change with him, but he probably doesn't need to see the floor as much as a lot of the other guys.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things where you see it sometimes with guys who are, coming back from injury, doing rehab, where the game seems really sped up and really fast. You feel like everything is very mental, and he's not able to go and play free, and whether that's a change in the way of FIBA rules versus, traditional college basketball. But the one thing you go and look at is that turnover that he had where he thought – whoever was out leaking in front of him, he got the ball at half court and made a little pass straight to the Houston defender. You can see his brain is just working almost so hard that he's not able to go and play the game that that he knows how to play. It's just not coming together right now.
That's right. Well, the other thing, too, on that very last play, they definitely fouled us. There's no question about that. But you're not going to get that call with that little amount of time left on the clock unless it's just absolutely egregious.
Yeah, that's
not gonna get that call.
That's the like the texter said, the fade. That's what I consider the, you have 6 seconds left, you're at midfield and you're down by three, or it's a tie game and you're throwing the ball to the sideline and everybody complains about the pass interference that's well over his head. Like you're not going to get any sort of call like that, because as much as the officials love to put themselves into the middle of a game, they don't want it to ultimately end with their whistle or lack thereof on the final play.
No, not in that situation. Well, as far as football is concerned, I was glad to see that the Iron Bowl got moved to slated to be a night game. That's mm-hmm. a good thing. But, I don't know what we're going to do with this coaching search, guys, because with so many of these coaches that are in contention for a possible playoff berth, I mean, outside of, obviously, if Summerall is the guy, I could probably see Summerall maybe going ahead and just telling, if we've already made some deals behind the scenes with him, I could see him telling his athletic director, hey, I'm moving on, and saying, announcing that maybe before their last game of the season or something like that, because everybody knows Tulane is not going to win the national title. I mean, let's get real. So if he's the guy, because of it being a smaller school, I could see him maybe moving on before the season's over. But anybody else that's in contention for a playoff berth, I mean, we're stuck as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, Lonnie, I agree with that. I do. I agree that it's broken is what I said. I think last week is the idea that Penn State, Auburn, LSU, Florida, they're all trying to go after big-name guys, but any guy who has a big name has their team in contention to make or win the college football playoff. And I don't think it's fair. And look, the fair is in August is what I say, but it's not fair to these big-name programs who are having to choose. You're being punished for going after a successful coach who's in contention, I guess, is what I'm trying
to say. Well, you know what solves it? Uncle T-Bone and I were talking about it yesterday. You know what solves it? Get rid of the early signing period in December, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, you're right. Lottie, we appreciate it, brother. Always good to hear from you, man. Yep, and that gets into the calendar conversation, right? It's more of the college football calendar is the issue more than anything else, and Lonnie's not the first one to bring it up.
No.
But it's true.
It is. You feel like you're having to, you as in all of these head coaching vacancies, you feel like you're having to rush into a hire to try and still get a majority of the guys that commit or flip on early signing day. You feel
not
like you're
mention,
rushing into a decision,
yeah.
Much less keeping everybody during what is about to be right after whoever gets hired. The portal window.
Correct. That's what I was going to say. Is it's a three-pronged problem where you're having to finish up high school recruiting, hit the transfer portal, and also retain your roster. And that's just – it's wrong.
While for some of those other coaches – compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes, right, you see this with coordinators who agree to become the next head coach at school X, Y, or Z, but they finish out their run in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
That's easier to do as a coordinator than it is as the head coach somewhere, okay? The coordinators don't have nearly as much recruiting responsibilities. They do, but not as much. They don't have nearly the media responsibilities. They do, just not as much. And they don't have nearly the leadership responsibilities. They do, just not as much as the head coach. It's amplified times five for the head coach compared to an offensive or defensive coordinator or even just a positional coach, right? It's so much easier for the defensive line coach to accept a job offer and just go there when the season's done. But as a head coach, if you're Auburn and you find somebody and you hire them and come to an agreement, man, I want you here tomorrow. I want your house packed up. I want you on a plane and you and your family get to town because you've got work to do.
Yeah. And you better start making phone calls now.
On the plane.
Not after.
We'll pay for the Wi-Fi. Start calling, right? Yeah. We'll pay. And we want you working as soon as we get pen to paper. Right? But to Lonnie's point and what Auburn is trying to figure out, and I guarantee these are conversations that John Cohen is having, is what do you do? What do you do? Who do you go after? And while that question is still being debated, you know who's not in contention for a college football playoff? You know who's not from the outside? Is DJ Durkin, who is your interim head coach at the moment, who had a press conference today.
And a good one.
And a pretty darn good one.
Yeah.
And answered the hot question that everybody was debating that we talked about late last week. And it was the first question of the press conference. And you mentioned it earlier, how he joked that he won a bet that he knew
that was going to be careful.
Yeah, sorry. That was going to be the first question that was asked of him. And what a crazy idea, just to put this out there. What a crazy idea that it's almost like he was ready for the question. Like he knew it was coming and had an answer ready to go.
And decided to give an answer.
Man.
Whew.
Man.
Hot off the press, baby.
I mean, breaking news. Head coach knows what's going on. What a wild situation. The question was...
Interim head coach DJ Durkin is a part of a decision.
And was prepared. Funny how that works.
Yeah, and gave a really, really good answer.
He did.
As well.
He did. He knew what the question was going to be, which was, hey, what are you doing with Ashton Daniels? What's the situation?
Yeah.
What's going on? Are you playing him this week? Are you basically foregoing his red shirt and playing him because he probably gives you the best chance to win? or are you going to respect that red shirt and sit him out this week? And his answer was phenomenal. He said, as the head coach, and this is what we talked about last week, this was the internal debate that he had to have, right?
Yeah.
In his head and with his coaches and with the families, was he said, as the head coach, it is my responsibility to put my team in positions to win football games. But it's also my responsibility to put my guys in positions to win and be successful and do what's best for them. And that's the route they chose.
Yeah, and I think that it is 100% the right route. It's the route that I was expecting Durkin to take because, yeah, said that it's his responsibility to put his guys in positions to win, but it's also from the standpoint of just being a head football coach and being in charge of 18 to 22 and now to 28-year-old men, it feels like, with all of the rules that can come and go, especially on the hardwood now, it's ridiculous. But saying it's my responsibility to make sure that I do the best for the individual player. And so it is confirmed Ashton Daniels will not step on the field against Mercer this Saturday. It will be Jackson Arnold and Deuce Knight, who the follow-up question was, what is the decision on that side of things? And Durkin said that he met with both of the quarterbacks. Crazy. Said that they are both very, very excited for the opportunity for Jackson to get back on the field, for Deuce to now see legitimate playing time. Both are going to play snaps. Both are going to see the field. He says at what volume, at what length, doesn't know if it's going to be and you wouldn't think it's going to be a drive-by-drive type situation, but said that both are going to be on the field. Both are going to play. Doesn't know which one is going to start, but gave a for-sure answer, gave an answer, stuck with it, and then gave reasons why. And you just feel like that eliminates any sort of questions that at least don't need to be answered, right? Obviously, you don't expect him nor need him to give an answer of, yep, it's going to be Deuce on first down and second down and third down and fourth down and fifth down. But then if he doesn't do this, then Jackson's going to come in. But you got the answers that you needed to get, and he said it confidently. He did it really well. I love the way that he doesn't give he's a defensive coordinator, man. He doesn't give some long, long speech beforehand, goes back and he answers questions, but does it really, really intently, does it really, really well. And you feel like the crowd is slowly starting to be won over by DJ Durkin, who you feel, based off of a couple other comments that he mentioned, doesn't really plan on shying away from the head coaching job at Auburn.
And why should he? Why should he? I mean, it seems like if you go out and do what you have the chance to do in the next 2 weeks, which is beat Mercer, which he had some good responses on that today, on focusing on a one-loss Mercer team that's coming to town this Saturday afternoon, and then a night Iron Bowl, right, 6:30 kick on national television, okay, you win those two games, then everything is on the table. And that all but answers the question that I have had for several weeks. Does he want the head coaching job? You think today he says yes.
And there's a couple quotes that I have that I want to get to on the other side of the break because, he is not backing away. Before we head to break, I will read the one quote, not about head coaching or anything, but arguably my favorite quote of the entire press conference. And it was Durkin being asked about the defensive struggles that they had against Vanderbilt and summarizing, so I guess not necessarily the true quote, but he said players get judged by what they can do on the field and how they look at film and how they can go out and make adjustments in the following weeks. It's my understanding and the way that I've always coached that coaches should go the same way about it. You should be able to make mistakes, but then you go in the film room and you correct it next week, and that's the adjustments that I'm going to make. So basically saying that, again, he loves, not necessarily loves the criticism, but he understands that it's a real thing, and he now has to go out there and respond to it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's just life, right?
But how many times do you see if a coach gets questioned about what he does unsuccessfully, all of a sudden it's the reporter's problem, and now you're uptight and you can't answer the question? You didn't feel like there was any negativity towards the question or even the answer. It just felt like it was a head coach, even now for the interim tag, it was a head coach going out there and say, yeah, I dropped what I needed to do. I dropped the ball on that. I hit the film room. I'm going to make adjustments, and you're going to see it look differently on Saturday.
Which we said was almost inevitable, but he also deserved a get-out-of-jail-free card right there. But the fact that he still was able to own it, not get defensive and say, yeah, we'll be better, yeah, that's what you want to hear. That's what you want to hear. But there's more quotes that Christian says is giving away what DJ Durkin truly wants, and if he wants to be the next head coach of Auburn football with the interim tag removed. We read those and respond to that and wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get into hour number two, where we will continue talking college football, look around some crazy results from this weekend, including the SEC that is starting to, I don't know if cannibalize itself is the way to go, but it got a whole lot more interesting this weekend. And
it wasn't our doomsday scenario, or was that what we called it? If Texas beat Georgia and Oklahoma beat Alabama, you didn't get both of those, but you got one of them, which opens up an entire conversation because now Oklahoma's 8-2, Vanderbilt's 8-2. Like it's
there's a lot going on there. So we'll talk about that to start hour number two. But continuing to break down what DJ Durkin had to say today at the interim at the press conference as the interim head coach, and something stood out to you, Christian, that you believe answers the question on if DJ Durkin wants to have a seat at the table, wants to have a foot in on the head coaching job at Auburn.
Yeah, he was asked if they, you know, because Cohen has verbalized multiple times that he's had numerous calls and interviews with sitting head coaches and all of those discussions. Durkin was asked, have you been a part of those interviews? Have you been interviewed by Cohen? What does that situation look like? And Durkin responded with, every single day that I'm on this job, it's an interview. And I have to go out and basically win the day, whether that's at practice, whether that's on Saturdays. I have to go and be interviewed daily for what I could bring to this program as a head coach. He then said, our administration has talks, but my main talking is going to be what's played out on the field on Saturdays. That goes to show you right there, in my opinion, that it makes the job a little bit more difficult, because how we made jokes about how easy would it be for Cohen and everybody if Durkin walked in and said, all right, I just want to be the defensive coordinator. Perfect. Check him off.
Cool.
Now we can go this way. Now it opens up that much more of a door of, man, you're bringing a guy that already has the ties with Auburn, already has all of the recruiting, has everything. You're now a great coordinator offensively away from making a big-time improvement, whether that's keeping Derek Nix or whether that's going out and getting somebody else. But you feel like that quote right there of every day that I have is an interview on what I could bring to this program as the head coach.
And, I mean, I think that makes sense, and it does answer that question for me. A couple of people said this on our text box. Summerall is a coaching leader and could have a deal for Durkin to stay as DC and bring in Neil Brown as the OC.
I did see that conversation.
Somebody else also brings up a point that we don't have time to answer, but allow you to think on this through the break. Why is it that DJ Durkin is not being mentioned with any other head coaching jobs besides Auburn? It's an interesting point. I think he's being brought up for DC jobs elsewhere, but as the head coach, I'm not sure. You can ponder that as we head to break. Stick around. Hour number two is coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a sunny, beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area. If you missed any of hour number one, man, we had a lot of fun. We covered a lot in the first 60 minutes of today's show. We talked Auburn basketball as Stephen Pearl and the boys took their first loss of the season yesterday in Birmingham, 73-72 to the number one team in the country. Shout out to the Auburn crowd that showed up, man. That was 18,000 strong and at least returned the favor of what Auburn had to do a year ago going to downtown Houston. This wasn't downtown Auburn, but Birmingham, we know, can show up and show out for some Auburn basketball. And so, shout out to those fans who were there yesterday, but a tough loss for Auburn in Birmingham. We talked about that, plus what this game means and kind of what Auburn has coming up. And then we flipped over to football and talked about DJ Durkin's answer to the question of who will play quarterback this weekend for Auburn. He says Ashton Daniels will not play. They will preserve that red shirt. That way he can play in one more game and not burn it. And that Deuce Knight and Jackson Arnold will play this weekend against Mercer, but did not give away the goods on who will start on Saturday. So, discussed all of that and more in hour number one. If you missed it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We post that on our station website each and every day at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, not as much Auburn-centric college football, but just college football as a whole, as it delivers once again this past weekend. We get to recap our games around the SEC and around the top 25, give you a little update on our leaderboard as well. Not the best week all the way around, but we'll discuss
this
that
is updated,
here.
Isn't it?
This is. Gosh. We will discuss this momentarily. And then we get to talk about what some of these games are this upcoming weekend. Again, as usually, this week is the cupcake week, but with how everything is played and now you play a couple of your weirder games in the middle of your season, there's some really big games in college football this weekend. You have some teams that are on the road that have college football playoff aspirations. You have top 25 games with both teams having college football playoff aspirations. And so we get to discuss all of that here in the first 30 minutes of hour number two. And then we get to talk with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network to recap a little Auburn men's basketball, talk a little Auburn women's basketball as well, as that is coming up once again here tonight on ESPN 106.7. And then a look at Auburn and Mercer, and then obviously talk a little bit about the Iron Bowl as the time is released, 6:30 inside Jordan-Hare Stadium on ABC. All of that coming up here in hour number two. But if you would like to be a part of the conversation, the phone lines are open for the next 30 minutes at 334-321-1390. The new AP poll has come out. We have the college football playoff rankings that come out tomorrow evening, version 3. Do we expect any changes? What changes could there be? Is there a team that's a lock for the college football playoff that might not already be statistically as the 99%? Because there are four teams right now that have a 99% chance or greater, according to the ESPN projections, to make the college football playoff. And a couple of those teams got some really big wins. A couple of teams had to come from behind, and one team had to put out possibly Shane Beamer from South Carolina in order to do so.
Yeah.
And that's where we get to start here in hour number two, talking about college football delivering once again.
Are you on the boat of Shane Beamer should be out at South Carolina? I mean, that seems to be gaining traction on the interwebs this weekend. And I just, that seems dirty to me, man. That seems wrong to me. I know that South Carolina had aspirations this year of making it to the college football playoff. I would say as a dark horse, right? I think that was always the case in 2025, that South Carolina was a dark horse to make it to the college football playoff, which is why at 3-7, they're not happy with what they're having right now and what the season holds. And then with how Saturday afternoon went down in College Station, where you were up 30-3 on the number 3 team in the country in their house, and you let them come all the way back and beat you 31-30.
And the videos walking into the locker room at halftime don't really help.
Okay, I don't think that's a problem, though. I don't understand why people are fired up about that.
No, but
he was celebrating with his crowd that was there. They were fired. You can't blow the game after that.
I think that's more of the comedic thing. I don't have an issue with him doing that. It's just more of the fact of if there was, I can't even make fun of him and say if there was one coach to do it, it would be Beamer, but it's just the fact of people use any positivity to negativity as soon as one thing doesn't go your way.
Which I don't think is totally fair. I think he was celebrating with his fans. They just whooped you A&M for two quarters,
yeah,
right? And you were fired up heading into the locker room. But then, yeah, you come out and drop a big fat egg in the second half. You get shut out. You give up, right? 28 points unanswered in two quarters, and you blow it. You blow your biggest opportunity at your biggest win of the season. And while it wouldn't have saved it, it would have made it a little bit better, right? And so, I don't know, man. Maybe the way they lost is why people are just out on him. But, man, we were talking about Shane Beamer preseason as one of the best coaches in the league.
Yeah.
One bad year, I don't think, at South Carolina should get you canned for a guy that they absolutely loved before this season started.
If you had one thing to say, it would be, if he was having discussions, it would be to possibly Virginia Tech, but now there's a leader in the clubhouse for that Virginia Tech job. And he used to coach at a different college.
He ain't coming here, baby. That's all I care about.
As James Franklin, yeah, is accordingly the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, apparently they're having discussions for him to go to Virginia Tech, I think makes a lot of sense for them, by the way.
A wild hire that would possibly be. Let's get to the phone lines at 334-321-1390. And Daniel, you're on the line here on this Monday afternoon. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are doing well. I'm enjoying this absolute beautiful weather in mid-November.
It's incredible.
Hey, I wanted to talk about Beamer a little bit. There was, I think it was 30-10, and, you know, it was after A&M's early second half touchdown where everybody across the country kind of gulped, and we kind of knew that the possible upset was over, even still being down 20. I think it was 30-10, and it was, I think Carolina was on A&M's side of the field, and they could have kicked a field goal, but they didn't. They went for it on fourth, and they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my wife and I, she's amazing. She's locked in on Saturdays. We looked at each other, and we were like, why did they just do that? No doubt should have just kicked a field goal right then, even if it, you know, and it would have been 33 instead of just 30. And but just crazy. I wanted to call in and talk about, you guys started talking about the firing conversations of Beamer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. What are the expectations around South Carolina football? Like, when you hear South Carolina football, what record comes to mind that is per status or per quota? What is the profile of South Carolina football? And are South Carolina fans delusional for calling for that? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Daniel. 334-321-1390. And funny enough,
sorry, I had a Christmas ad.
That's what it sounded like.
Thank you, ESPN.
Breaking news. It's official. James Franklin at Virginia Tech. Literally just got the notification from Yahoo Sports.
Look at that, Daniel. We did it.
Ha!
Jacob's days of worrying about having to go to the introductory press conference and James Franklin already knowing his name are over with.
Oh, that would have been probably the worst. I may have had to quit. I'm not joking. I may have had to quit sports talk radio in this town.
Hey, I'm...
The amount of times
Jacob
I've called...
Jones?
Jeez. Yeah, Jacob Goins, ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, the guy that has called you a loser on the radio. Welcome to the Plains.
He would have 100%. Yeah, I know who you are.
Yeah, probably. Oh. Thank God that that didn't happen. But yeah,
breaking
news.
Trying to get a question out of after that.
I would.
That was all. I just had to introduce myself.
Yeah, I'm just make sure. James Franklin, breaking news. That's confirmed. We saw the reports this weekend that they were in talks. But yeah, breaking news. It is confirmed that James Franklin will be the new head coach at Virginia Tech.
That's so wild because I searched his name 3 minutes ago and there was nothing, and now you see it. Minute ago.
Yep. So there you go. There's some breaking news on this Monday afternoon, which, by the way, Daniel, we're going to get to your thoughts in just a second. That's a great hire for Virginia Tech.
It is.
Okay. It's a great hire. Is James Franklin a horrible coach? No. He's actually a pretty darn good one. He just can't win big games. But Virginia Tech doesn't play big games.
I was going to say, Virginia Tech, A, you don't play the big ones, and B, you don't really need to win them because... I mean, you get Enter Sandman and go 8-4, 9-3 for the next 10 years.
Especially in the ACC. Are you kidding me? You're playing in the worst P4 conference in the country? Arguably a conference that's worse than some G5 conferences right now? Like, yeah, that's a no-brainer for Virginia Tech, and it's a no-brainer for James Franklin. You go there with little to no expectations. All you got to do is win. Have a winning season in Blacksburg, and they're fine. A guy who has won 128 games over the last 15 seasons at Vanderbilt and Penn State. Those stats are from Pete Thamel. So that's a no-brainer. Everybody should be happy with that if you're at Virginia Tech or you're James Franklin. Now, you won't have a chance to. I really thought he was going to take a job in the Big Ten, Christian. I really did. I thought he was going to take maybe like the Michigan State or the UCLA job just to shove it to Penn State. But this is probably the smarter decision for him, to where you go to a place with low expectations, a place in the ACC, and you can go and get paid a couple million dollars. I haven't seen if there's any contract details yet on what they're going to pay him. I'd be fascinated to see what kind of money Virginia Tech's going to fork over, and also what his NIL and revenue sharing is going to be there at Virginia Tech, to where if they can be competitive. But I would like to think it's something decent, or he would not have accepted the job. But, to Daniel's point, back to talking South Carolina Shane Beamer.
And we'll get a legitimate boots-on-the-ground guy from Columbia here momentarily. I just sent a text about basically asking Daniel's question. So we'll
texted
one of my buddies and asked him, what are your legitimate expectations to get a Columbia grad? And he said, basically, are the conversations of firing Shane Beamer, where does that sit with the fan base? And so we'll get his thoughts just from the boots on the ground, inside, spent time inside the program as well. And so we'll get those conversations here in a little bit. When I think of South Carolina, I mean, obviously it gets mediocre and numb at times, but 7-5, 8-4.
Yeah, I mean, that's about it.
You feel like that brings a good enough year where they get one of those upsets every year, whether that's Clemson, whether that's Alabama. They keep another one close, but just can't ever get over that hump. It was that 9-3 year last year, them getting over the hump, and that made it to where they were able to get that one big-time game. I mean, you look at what Lenora Sellers was able to do in the back half of the season. That was the biggest reason why he was arguably one of the most exciting quarterbacks going into this season that had Heisman conversations. It's wild. Who would have done that? Who would have thrown him in that category of saying that he's one of the best quarterbacks in college football this year? That's crazy to think about who would have done that. If he had an offensive line, it could possibly be the case. But no, I mean, I throw that into the 7-5, 8-4 conversations, and I don't think that the program of South Carolina as a whole is successful enough or good enough to have legitimate conversations of a coach who just went 9-3. If he goes 5-7 that very next year, to immediately have conversations of not having a head coach. That feels very influenced by those around you.
His buyout would be he's getting paid $8 million, which is ninth in the SEC. He's a top 20 paid coach in college football. His buyout, if they were to fire him right now without cause, they would owe him nearly $28 million, which is a big chunk of money, but it's not the worst buyout we've ever heard. When I think of South Carolina, yeah, I'm the same way. I think 7-5, 8-4. I think it took a Hall of Fame coach in Steve Spurrier to make them relevant. And I think they are middle of the pack in terms of funding and buy-in and things like that. Their fans are awesome. Their atmosphere is great. And when it's good, it's great. But it's just so random and so rare for them to have that. Again, it took a Hall of Famer to make them real and relevant.
Yeah, it's a very sporadic environment and program on the football side.
To what my response then would be, if you fire Shane Beamer, who are you going to get? That is a legitimate question at South Carolina. I know that other teams, fan bases, bring that up every time a coach's job is in question. Auburn, Florida, Arkansas, right? Arkansas, I think, is in that category too. But, man, what are you going to do? And if you're South Carolina, why would you do it right now?
Right now.
Yeah. Why would you do it now? Which is a weak mentality. And I'm so glad that Auburn fans got out of that and Auburn didn't allow that to really catch fire and
talking
prevent
about,
them from firing Hugh Freeze.
Talking about them saying, well, Auburn would be the fifth or sixth best job.
Yeah, well, maybe we should wait one more cycle because we're – like, no, that's a weak mentality for a place like Auburn. But Auburn and South Carolina are on two different levels historically, okay? In the last 5 or 6 years, no. Auburn is right down there with them. But historically – Auburn is a much, much better job than South Carolina. But that's my point, is if you get rid of Shane Beamer, what do you do? I did see this on the internet this weekend, and I want to read out some of this because this is fascinating. Do you remember the Will Muschamp era at South Carolina?
I do.
Would you like to know how eerily similar the numbers are between Muschamp's time at South Carolina and what Shane Beamer has done at South Carolina? This goes against my argument of firing Shane Beamer, but this is fascinating. Their overall records, Muschamp was 28-30. Shane Beamer's 32-29. Two games difference. Their SEC record, Muschamp was 17-22. Shane Beamer is 16-24. So Muschamp has one more win in SEC play than Shane Beamer does. Bowl games, they both made three of them, and they're both 1-2. Top 25 recruiting classes in their time at Columbia. Muschamp had 5, Shane Beamer has 4. In their best season, they both went 9-4. Muschamp in 2017, and Shane Beamer last year. That's from Walker Gaskins on X. Oof. So think about how close in similarity those two coaches are. And they showed Muschamp the door. Just food for thought. I don't think Shane Beamer should lose his job.
I don't either.
I think that's blasphemy. I do. I think that is a knee-jerk reaction from South Carolina fans who need to be humbled and realize that it may not get better than him. And that sucks, and I'm sorry. That's harsh. But especially in this cycle, like, come on, man. That team is also just decimated with injuries. I mean, that team is a shell of what it was supposed to be. I don't know. I don't think you can tell Shane Beamer loves South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think that's unfair to him, but maybe they'll do it. I don't know.
7:13 left in the third quarter. South Carolina had 4th and goal at the 1 from the Texas A&M 30, the point that Daniel
before
brought up earlier.
Was a 3rd and 2.
Yeah, got a 1-yard run. Made it 4th and 1, and they stonewalled at the line of scrimmage. A&M got the ball, went 7 plays, 70 yards in 3 minutes, made it 30-17. South Carolina then punted, hit the end of the quarter, and punted and turn it over on downs. That is their four drives following that. After that stop, A&M went touchdown, 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 fumble, kneel down.
Doesn't help the argument for Shane Beamer, that's for sure. And that game was fun. It was crazy. But there were other good ones in the SEC and in college
Daniel
football
for making
as well.
Us talk about South Carolina for 20 minutes.
I wanted to. I'm glad we did because that was a big conversation. But other big results around the SEC and college football, we hit on those on the other side here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our second bottom of the hour break where Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us. We have a bunch of things to talk about with him. We'll talk about football, basketball, men and women's. Volleyball is heading to the SEC tournament and things like that. So a ton going on in Auburn Athletics that we'll talk about with Jacob Hillman coming up in just a few minutes. But other big results in college football this week. And Christian, kind of go rapid fire here and probably touch on these some more tomorrow too. Georgia just blasts Texas as people expected they should. That spread was 3. And Georgia opens up a can in the second half, especially the fourth quarter, and wins by 25.
I had to go back and listen to our podcast, which you can over at ESPNAU.com.
Boom.
In the podcast center. Because on our Google Doc, I was looking at it, and I don't know if one of us mistyped or whatever, but under your name, it had Texas as the projector. And I said, I don't think that's right. And I had to go back and listen to.
Ain't no way I picked Texas.
No, you didn't. Okay. But that's why when I read it, I was like, oh, wow. Because I remember you did your ain't no way. And then I thought you said, like, you know what? Give it to me. But you didn't.
No. No.
Man, I went away from my gut a couple times.
We did not have good weeks.
I said it was Dabo's team. And you said, no, it kind of convinced me out of it. Yeah,
Clemson
got the win.
God.
I really wanted to go with it with Arizona, but I said that Cincinnati would kick a game-winning field goal.
Oh, my Bearcats, man. They've disappointed me down the stretch.
Yeah.
How about Navy beating South Florida? That was a crazy game.
Look, based off of our 10-game selection, again, that we do every single Friday starting at 3 o'clock. Last week it was on Thursdays to start the show because with both of us being on the road for playoff games, didn't have a Friday show. But I believe we both started 1-4.
Ooh. That's
and
gross.
And sat there and I was sitting there scrolling. It's like, oh, gosh, that's a loss. That's a loss. That's a loss. Because I believe our first ones were Clemson-Louisville on Friday nights. It was Notre Dame, South Florida, Alabama, Oklahoma.
USC, Iowa, probably.
No, because we both had USC in that one, and we both
that was
the one that we got
right.
Yeah,
we won that one.
Oh, gosh, what was the other one? Hold on. I'm going to find it real fast.
We picked Ole Miss, Florida for fun, which Florida made that interesting.
They did. No, they very much
did.
I think Arizona, Cincinnati was one of them as well. But no, so after everything is said and done, we both started 1-4. I won my last 5, went 6-4, and you finished 5-5. So we are, 13 weeks into the season with 2 more to go?
And tied.
Here we are again.
How in the world, man?
Deadlocked at 77 wins and 43 losses.
Congrats to Notre Dame for getting just a crazy, great, unbelievable playoff-building win.
I mean,
over
their
Pittsburgh.
Head coach said that Notre Dame could put up 100 on them if Pitt would win the other two. Notre Dame tried and almost did it.
Yeah, they did. USC takes down Iowa. Congrats to the Hawkeyes. Another close loss. They're fourth of the year. We should move them up in the rankings. I think they should make the playoffs, honestly.
James Franklin's gone, and Jacob had to find another team
to hate on. Shout out Northwestern for covering against Michigan and had every chance to win that game and couldn't do it.
Same with Boston College.
And then somehow we've made it an hour and a half and have yet to mention Alabama loses to Oklahoma. How about the Sooners going to Tuscaloosa? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thankfully, they won in basketball, though. Sorry.
More on that as we go. We're going back to
Auburn.
We know
nothing about losing on the football field.
Yeah, couldn't be us. Can't lose a bye week unless you try really hard. We talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And we get to our first guest of the week, a guy who joins us every Monday at 3:30, helps out with the incredible work of the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob Hillman joining us on the phone lines now. Happy Monday, sir. Are you enjoying the, 15th coming of summer that we're having in Auburn today?
You know, we keep going back and forth with this weather and the temperature, but it was nice to be able to get out on the golf course this weekend with the bye week before the Auburn-Houston game on Sunday. So I'm not too mad about it.
There's no way that you went on to the golf course on bye week, right? I mean, there's no way.
who would have guessed? That's all I'll say.
Was the score or the temperature higher?
Unfortunately, the score was. It was perfect condition.
Christian, he's been waiting all day to tell us that he golfed this weekend, knowing that we didn't. knowing dang well we didn't golf this weekend. So, look.
Well, listen, y'all got some high school teams deep in the playoffs. It's a crunch time for you guys as well. So
One of us has a team still playing.
Hey, Hillman, when you want to go golfing sometime in a weekend, you just let me know because my weekends are free.
Friday night? You guys go play Friday night golf?
Well, hey, who knows? We'll see.
Well, man, I hope you enjoyed your golf this weekend with the bye, and now we're back in action, of course, with football back inside of Jordan-Hare, basketball going wide open on men and women's as well, and we're going to dive into all of that here today. As Auburn football on the bye week and coming off of that now, heading back inside of Jordan-Hare, we'll talk about Mercer coming up in just a couple of minutes, but DJ Durkin had the weekly press conference today. And the pressing question that everybody has debated for the past week and wondered what they were going to do was the quarterback room and the quarterback situation. And if Ashton Daniels would play, if Deuce Knight would play, if Jackson Arnold would play, or in what combination we would see. And what we do know and got confirmed from DJ Durkin today is that Ashton Daniels will not play because of his redshirt protection. Your thoughts on that and what we could see this weekend?
Yeah, when Coach Durkin talked about it for the first time last week, I guess it was, and he talked about it. They want to do what's best for the student athlete, for the player, and that is going to be what's best for Ashton, is that he gets another year of college football. Obviously, this year hasn't gone exactly to plan for Auburn, and it'll be interesting to see what the offense looks like with Jackson Arnold back at the helm, and with offensive coordinator Derek Nix really leading the charge on the offensive side. It was a really great to see against Vanderbilt with the Tigers having the success that they did, getting the ball to his playmakers in Eric Singleton, in Cam Coleman. Jeremiah Cobb is nearing 1,000 yards on the season. He had another 100-yard rushing game against Vanderbilt. And I think it's something that kind of gives Jackson a chance to showcase his skills again, as well as Deuce Knight for this upcoming next few games, because if Auburn's to win against Mercer and Alabama, there's obviously a bowl game to be played as well. And that's just a big thing to be. Gosh, obviously you're going game to game, and that's what Coach Durkin talked about. You know, he was asked about the Iron Bowl and being at night, and he didn't even realize that because he's so focused on Mercer. But you do, in the back of your mind, obviously know of the bigger picture, and that does come into that decision. And again, I think Jackson and Deuce are absolutely capable of leading this offense to the heights that Ashton Daniels did against Vanderbilt. And as long as the plan is in place, then they're going to have success on Saturday against the Bears.
Well, that's a Mercer team that a lot of people have begun to dive into and notice that they are pretty darn good. 9-1 on the season are the Mercer Bears out of the Southern Conference. We're talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. Their first game of the year was canceled. They then lost their next game, their first actual game against Presbyterian, 15-10. And Hillman, they've done nothing but win ever since. And that offense is electric. They have totals of 38, 38, 45, 38, 62, 52, 49, 63. I mean, this team can move the football and put it in the end zone. What have you noticed or what do you want to see this weekend for Auburn inside of Jordan Hare to not get snuck up and beat by this Mercer Bears team?
Yeah, I think Mercer leads FCS in passing offense, second in total offense, and fourth in scoring offense. And on the defensive side, the Bears lead the FCS in sacks. So this team is the elite team in FCS. Like you mentioned, the one slip up against Presbyterian at the beginning of the year, and since then this team is locked in and kept winning and really rallied since then. So this is a game that you look at it on the calendar before the season, you chalk it up as a win. It's an FCS opponent, but coming off a bye week, I think that helps quite a bit as well, just to really get as healthy as possible as you can be in mid-November. And then obviously this coaching staff that's kind of having to adjust its roles with Durkin being elevated to the interim role, Derek Nick fully taking over the play calling duties, and with Coach Durkin's elevation, obviously the rest of the defensive staff probably takes on a few extra responsibilities here and there. So I think that's the biggest key, is that you're coming off a bye week after you already got one game under your belt. That was the complete scramble to get ready for it in a ranked Vanderbilt game. And now you get to settle in for a week, get a little bit of rest, and also get back into the action. And hopefully you can find a way to win two more games and get to bowl eligibility with the end of this season. Two games at home, that's the biggest thing, I feel like. And it's that you're not going on the road, that you're here at home and in front of the best fans in the country. It's going to be another two sellouts. We're going to get to a 22nd consecutive sellout with the Iron Bowl. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere over the next 2 weeks, and I think that's going to be a big key for the Tigers these next two games.
Well, yeah, you definitely excuse me, don't want to overlook this Mercer team, but can't help go ahead and notice the release that was made today with the Iron Bowl, another night game, the 6:30 kick over on ABC inside Jordan Hare. All four home games in the SEC for Auburn have been night games. Brings a little frustration of what the season could have been, but now that you have turned the tides, and now with interim head coach DJ Durkin, Ashton Daniels will now have plenty of time to preview and look at this Alabama defense. What are you excited to see, whether that be something in the game or just the overall tradition of the Iron Bowl set again once again inside Jordan Hare Stadium, but a night game here this year in 2025?
Yeah, first night game Iron Bowl in Jordan Hare Stadium since 2007. So it has been a long, long time since that's happened. The first Iron Bowl at night since 2014. So this is a rare occurrence. It's not something that happens very often. And now with the new TV deal with Disney, it's going to happen more often just because of the way ABC wants to slot the top games in the SEC, and the Iron Bowl being one of those top games. Obviously, they're going to put that in primetime more often than not, and it's just going to be an incredible atmosphere, and it always is with the Iron Bowl, regardless of the game time. But I'm just so excited for the opportunity that is going to be in front of this Auburn team. Is you if you handle business against Mercer, you will have a chance to extend your season against Alabama, and obviously with the loss to Oklahoma for the Crimson Tide, it's going to be a chance to ruin their season as well and crush their playoff hopes. So those are two opportunities that you can't really look past, and this fan base will understand as well when it gets to that point. So just very excited for Auburn to be able to have that opportunity and in front of a night game environment at Jordan-Hare Stadium for the Iron Bowl.
Well, as college football is starting to wind down, basketball season is just getting started. Our man Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us on the phone lines. And after a 3-0 start for Stephen Pearl in season one at the helm, you took on the number one ranked team in the country yesterday afternoon in Birmingham. I know you were there in attendance, Hillman, you and about 18,000 fans there in Birmingham as Auburn falls just short, 73-72. What are your takeaways after a one-point loss to Houston? Houston, the number one team in the country, and what Auburn can do coming up in the next several weeks with some big games on the schedule.
Yeah, I thought it was an encouraging. The result is obviously not what you wanted, and Coach Pearl went on about that in his post game presser. They were there to win that game, and it's disappointing that they didn't. But you know, from our aspect, looking from the outside looking in, it's much more encouraging. You know, going into that environment, obviously with the crowd behind you, this team. Really took advantage of that, and that was very good to see. Even when trailing throughout most of the game, it felt like Auburn was down 6, 7, 8 points just the entire game, but Auburn would make those quick little burst runs to get within one or two, and Houston would answer. But the point is, it was a back and forth affair, and Auburn had a chance to win at the end of the game. And I just really thought that everyone really stepped up in certain aspects. And it was unfortunate the free throw shooting wasn't where Auburn wanted it to be, and that if you make half of those misses, then you win that game probably pretty easily with the way the defense stepped up in the last 3 minutes of the game. Houston did not score a single point in the last 2 minutes and 57 seconds, I think. That's when Houston made that three-pointer to get to 73, and Auburn made its run to get within 1 point. But I just think that this team has it, and it's got to gel together a little bit more. Whenever it gels together, these guys are going to understand their roles. And obviously, Keyshawn Hall goes down with 4 minutes and 15 seconds to go. So how does the result change if he's available those last 4 minutes? Those are all things you have to consider. And all things considered, I was happy with the way this team played, the way it rallied when it went down and continued to answer the punches. Elijah Freeman obviously had that incredible dunk over two of the best rim protectors in the nation and Chris Sinak Jr. and Joseph Tugler. That just, he's a highlight reel. And I think he's going to have a chance to develop into a great player for Auburn as well as all the other guys on the court. So I'm excited for what's to come on Wednesday because we'll see what Keyshawn Hall's availability is, but it'd be hard to imagine him going against Jackson State just the way he exited that game against Houston. And that will provide an opportunity for other guys to step up and really make their presence known on Wednesday.
And, yeah, that was going to be the follow-up that I had for you. Again, as Auburn stays the number 22 team in the country in the AP poll for the hardwood. But Wednesday night against Jackson State, back at home inside Neville Arena, Auburn has been thrown to the fire already, or thrown to the wolves, thrown into the fire against Houston. You now have that one little tune-up game before you head out to Las Vegas in what is going to be an absolutely incredible Players Era tournament where you have Oregon scheduled for the 24th, Michigan scheduled for the 25th, and if you play your cards right and the chips fall how they do, possibly a championship game on Wednesday evening. What do you want to see from this Auburn team inside Neville Arena and that one little tune-up game before you play a lot of teams with numbers next to their name over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, it goes back to the fact that I wouldn't anticipate. I don't know the injury report on Keyshawn Hall, but I would expect him to be at the very at best be limited in that game against Jackson State. So who are some of the guys that are going to step up and help in the scoring column for Auburn? Is it Keyshawn Murphy in the post? Is it Sebastian Williams Adams with his inside-outside game? And Elijah Freeman, we've seen his ability and that he can be the guy for Auburn in some of these games. And obviously, Tahad Pettiford is working his way. He started the year just not shooting the ball well, but I think, and Coach Pearl mentioned this after, I believe, the Wofford game, that when his defense improved and that's when the shots will start to fall. He watched the Houston game from last year, and that was probably Todd's best defensive game, and that's when he had his coming out party in the scoring department. His defense looked awesome yesterday with 2 steals and 2 blocks. I think that's got to continue for Todd to really find his rhythm on offense and engineer the offense the best way possible.
And Hillman, as we wrap up our conversation on this Monday afternoon, other things going on around Auburn Athletics as women's basketball set to tip off here in just a couple of hours. That broadcast will be live here on ESPN 106.7 beginning at 5:45 with tip-off set for 6 p.m. with Britt Bowen on the call. And Auburn volleyball is in action late this week as well for the SEC tournament. So tell the people what's going on in other sports on the Plains.
Yeah, Auburn women's basketball tonight, let me tell you that. The Education Day atmosphere was incredible.
Yes.
Against Mississippi Valley State for the Tigers. And it was a good game for Auburn to kind of get its offense rolling against Mississippi Valley State. But it continues tonight against Georgia State, 6 o'clock at Neville Arena. Coverage right here, like Jacob said, on ESPN 106.7 at 5:45. We're also going to have Tiger Talk at 6 o'clock on Wings 94.3 FM. Interim head coach DJ Durkin, as well as head equestrian coach Jessica Braswell. Equestrian has a huge 1-versus-2 matchup on Friday at 3 Central against Georgia. That is going to be a really monumental meet for the Tigers going into the spring season, as that will wrap up the fall for the equestrian team. And then you mentioned it, Auburn volleyball in the SEC volleyball tournament. The volleyball tournament makes a return for the first time in quite some time. But Auburn gets the first round bye and will face the winner of Oklahoma-Arkansas for a chance to go up against the one seed in Kentucky. So just a big week here as we start to enter postseason action for the fall sports and then Auburn football on Saturday against Mercer at 1 o'clock Central. We'll have coverage on Wings 94.3 FM beginning at 10 a.m. with the Tiger Tailgate Show. But again, a huge week of Auburn athletics, not to mention men's basketball on Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And the coverage beginning at 7:30.
Hillman, we appreciate you as always, my friend. A ton going on as crossover season is well on its way, and you guys do a fantastic job. And as we always say, we are enjoying and appreciative of the partnership we have with you guys at the Auburn Sports Network. So always appreciate the time, my man.
Of course, we appreciate it as well. And be sure to follow us on social media at AU Sports Network for all the broadcast details and everything else that's put out, like the weekly coaches interviews, Talking Tigers podcast, a great one with Alex McPherson today, hosted by Andy Burcham. But we'll talk next week, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate the time. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Check them out on everything they do, including coverage that we bring you with women's basketball here on ESPN 106.7, men's basketball on Wings 94.3, Tiger Talk on Wings 94.3, and Auburn football on Wings 94.3 as well. We'll tell you all that and more as we wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network for joining us, as he does every week. And tons going on around Auburn Athletics. And we've got so much happening on our family of radio stations the next couple of weeks. It's kind of overwhelming for those of us who are in charge of that. But we're happy to bring it to you. And it's exciting times right now where you have – see if I can do this off the rip and off the dome. Women's basketball tonight here on ESPN 106.7. So we're about to be done. The drive's coming up. They'll have you for about an hour and a half or so. They'll end early, and then Britt Bowen takes over for Auburn women's basketball. That'll be here on ESPN 106.7 starting at 5:45. You also have Tiger Talk going on tonight over on Wings 94.3. That's from 6 to 7 p.m., so you can check that out on Wings 94.3. Then Wednesday is Auburn men's basketball on Wings 94.3, and then... oh, goodness. Did the women play on Thursday this week, too? I can't remember. I don't have the schedule pulled up in front of me. But we have that, and then we have Auburn High. Oh, my goodness. I forgot about our high school basketball stuff. You've got Lee Scott Academy basketball tomorrow night on Tiger Country 104.5. We both have Auburn High basketball with Lee Scott on Thursday. More on that as the week goes on.
I'll tell you more about that. But
yeah, fun little crossover broadcast.
Getting the gang back together.
Yeah, that's right. That'll be on Thursday on 96.3 W Lee. Auburn High football on Wings 94.3 on Friday against Opelika in the state semis. And then Auburn University football on Saturday with game day on Wings to kick that coverage off. So
Auburn women's basketball, yeah, they play tonight. Play Georgia State at 6 and on the 20th, so on Thursday, They play Rutgers at 6 p.m. as well.
There you go. So if you are looking for something to listen to, we have so much for you.
Pick a channel.
Pick one of the six and hang out, because you'll listen. You'll find something you'll like. So, again,
we preferably Tiger Country 104.5 tomorrow.
Yeah, you certainly can do that tomorrow with Lee Scott Academy Basketball. You guys open up, not the season, but you open up your broadcast schedule and season on the road at Childersburg tomorrow.
We do, yes. At Childersburg, the girls scheduled for a 5:30 tip. The boys, I love that they always put the boys' time as well, because that could be...
It could be 6:40, it
could be 7:62.
You never really know.
But scheduled for a 5:30 and 7 tip at Childersburg. And so, yeah, so we will be on the call. So I might dip out of here a few minutes early tomorrow, but going to try and do my best to have a little interview with Lee Scott Academy Basketball in there as well. Just previewing, again, not the overall season, but the broadcast schedule. Get to know a little bit about the players, about the teams, and about the coaches prior to, what's going to be a very, very fun night here coming up on Thursday.
Yep, so a lot to get to, a lot to cover and talk about, and we continue to do that tomorrow with more interviews, more guests, and a whole lot more fun. We'll be back 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.